Let's do it.
We are back for the 9th episode of our weekly podcast, Home at Advantage. I am Sam Herring, accompanied by Jude Swisher, and we have a special guest this week, Mark Bayer of Flow Wrestling.
What's up, guys?
First of all, I just want to thank our veterans. And after this wonderful Memorial Day, I just did the Murph workout.
Oh, yeah?
And about died. but, yeah, so I just thankful for this country and the veterans. But on to the podcast, I want to thank Mark Bader for coming on to Home at Advantage to help us out a little bit.
Yeah.
We really appreciate you.
Yeah, you bet. Yes, my
so
pleasure
much,
to be here. I did the Murph myself. I did the Murph on Sunday, I think. Sunday.
Really?
Maybe it was Monday. I don't know. I did the Murph, my first one. So, cool. Glad you did it too, Sam. It wasn't. I thought it would be worse than it was, but it wasn't too bad.
Really?
Yep.
I missed out. I should have done it.
Always next year. There's always,
next year.
Week, really. Anytime you got a pull bar, you can do it.
Yeah. Well, hey, I would like to remind our listeners, send us some questions. We have a Twitter, HMA_pod. Our email is hmatadvantage@gmail.com. You can follow us at samwise_2006 and at @FRL_questioner. I'm sorry, Bader. I don't know your Twitter off the top of my head.
Man, that's all right. Go ahead, Sam.
Bader.
You got it.
Awesome. Well, I mean, let's hop right into it. So, Mr. Bader, we have some questions for you, about your past and about wrestling in general. So, first of all, why did you decide to start wrestling? What got you into it?
Well, family. I'm one of seven kids. I'm one of six boys. My oldest sister has six little brothers. So my oldest brother got cut from the soccer team in high school and was devastated and thought he was going to be a soccer player and just decided to give wrestling a try. Ended up being really good at it, just kind of naturally. Being one of six boys, we were rough and tumble anyways, right? We were always roughhousing at home. So I saw my one brother get into wrestling, went to one or two matches, and was just hooked immediately. He'd show us moves in the basement, and I have one brother who's just a year older than I am. So the two of us would carpet wrestle all the time. And then a year or two later, we found out that we didn't even know, right? There was such a thing as youth wrestling or little league wrestling. And so we saw somebody wearing a Bonham wrestling jacket, and we knew about Bonham kids football. So we were like, I wonder if there's a Bonham wrestling. However you looked into things back then, because there was no internet, but, you could still look into things somehow. We figured out there was a wrestling club, and then bada boom, bada bing, signed up, and the rest was history.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. Were you good at it right away, or?
Pretty good. Yeah. I lost my first match, which was everybody wrestled. Then most of the season was just novice. It was just first year wrestlers. And I won most of those tournaments. And I think part of it was cause I was short and strong for my size and full of piss and vinegar. Cause I had all these older brothers and was used to roughhousing. I think that was probably part of it.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
What was the first big tournament you wrestled in?
First big tournament? I mean, I didn't wrestle in many. I wrestled in Fargo once or twice. I didn't, I did an AAU national, but it wasn't. We definitely never did Beast of the East or Iron Man or any of that stuff. I went to a high school that was not very known for wrestling, so we just wrestled locally. So the first big tournament was, I guess, probably Fargo in, 97, something like that. Yeah.
Okay. How'd you do there?
Oh, I didn't medal. I probably went 3-2 or something like that. 4-2, maybe.
It's not bad.
Yeah.
Well, when did you realize you wanted to wrestle in college?
Oh, I think, I probably figured out I wanted to wrestle in college somewhere around my junior year of high school. I was pretty good. I was fifth as a freshman, second as a sophomore, and I won the next 2 years. So I knew if I wanted to go to college and wrestle, I could. I just wasn't sure, but I didn't really know anybody who wrestled in college. I had my older brothers all stopped after high school, and a couple, they were pretty good. They were all pretty good. But I was probably intimidated by it more than anything. I was like, I thought you're supposed to go to college and have fun and go to parties and, you know, eat whatever you want. And then it was like, oh, wow, this whole wrestling thing is going to be a completely different experience, you know,
right.
Discipline and early morning workouts and all your other friends are having a good time and living the college life. But something about me just wanted it, you know. I loved wrestling. And I guess I, you know, as much as it scares you, you want that challenge. You want to be able to push yourself. And I knew college wrestling was like a different beast. And that's why it was probably intimidating to me at first. But, yeah, probably around the summer between my junior and senior year, it's probably when it really hit me that, yeah, this is something I want to do. And I actually like, need, and want this structure and discipline that it can offer me. And if nothing less, this will help me get a job after college. Mm-hmm. You know, this if I go wrestle D1 for 5 years, this puts me in the upper echelon of people within the state of Missouri who are potential high school coaches, because there's not a whole lot of that.
Yeah.
So I knew that would open up doors, if nothing less. And then once I stepped on campus and got in the room, I felt it, and it was, I made the right choice.
What about Mizzou appealed to you that you wanted to go to college there? Was it just close to home, or?
It was proximity to home. It was familiarity. All I have, my older sister and two of my older brothers went there. Only one of my older brothers went elsewhere. He went to a small school in Ohio called Dayton, but three of my siblings have been there. I've been up there 100 times. I used to go to the summer camps when I was a kid. So through that, and I'd probably been to four or five of those.
The overarching goal for my freshman season, I just want to qualify for the RTC programs.
Whoa.
For those of you who don't know.
Man, what's going on? Why am I here?
I have no idea. I have no idea.
We have an old episode going or something.
Yeah, I guess. Well, that was interesting. All right.
That was weird.
If you could describe Coach Brian Smith in just one short sentence, what would you do? Or how would you do it?
Are we talking about the Brian Smith that coached me, or the Brian Smith today?
Well, Brian Smith that coached you.
He was a little bit more, I'm not in the room every day, but I got to think he was a little louder and more intense back in the day. He was, man, how do I describe Coach Smith? Because when you hear him talk, he's so soft-spoken, and he's always really calm. But I remember some instances where he got really fired up. And you got to remember, right, when I showed up to Mizzou at the same time Coach Smith did. So, right, somebody else, the old coaches recruited me. And then, you know, that spring or summer, there was a coaching change. And then in the fall of 1998, we both came in at the same time. And Mizzou was not very good, right? It was not very good. They weren't good. Maybe they stunk. And that was like the culture or the tone of the program. Everybody knew where they stood, right? We're not that great. We were here to work hard and wrestle and go to school. Mm-hmm. But, you know, and Smith came in and was like, no, we're here to be good. We are here to win. We're going to work hard. And those of you who don't want to be here, get out. You know, you will leave if you don't really want to do this. And,
wow.
And he's basically trying to make people quit, or basically seeing who could endure, you know, what he was putting us through. And a lot of the upperclassmen, a lot of the older guys did end up quitting because he put up with less, you know, he demanded more than the old coaches, and I love the old coaches, nothing against them. He was just disciplined, almost not militaristic, but very, very, very much into discipline and falling in line and really just trying to get people who were going to work hard and create a culture, right? And we weren't going to win right away, and that was okay, even though, I mean, you're now seeing the results, and you have for the last 10 years seeing the results of those first 4 or 5 years where people were put through the grinder. And by the end of my freshman year, we had 12 guys on the team.
Oh,
we had, 10 starters and 2 backups. And we started with 30-something. And it was just
That's crazy.
What did we call? We had a name for every week. It was just like, we it was like, you know, but we had like different names. It'd be like the Rowdy 15. Then we'd be like, you know, Unlucky 13. And then it was a dunk. And it was like, you know, yeah. It was just 2-3 kids every week. And it was a bunch, you know, in preseason and first semester. They were like, yeah, this is different than what I came here and signed up for or what I thought I was getting into 2-3 years ago.
Wow.
How far do you think Missouri was from their kind of switch in the tide, or how far were they from being one of the top teams? And was it kind of a gradual change of their culture, or was it kind of just 1 year Ben Askren came and changed the whole thing, or what happened at Missouri?
Were they from being really good when I got there?
Yes, sir.
Any question? Very far. Very far. We wrestled. So I started my true freshman year. There was a really good kid in front of me, but he quit a couple weeks before our first duel, and so I got thrown in the fire. And we wrestled Illinois first match, first duel of the year. We won one match. I don't know if I
like
remember
that shirt a lot.
Oh, thanks. There you go, Illinois.
Illinois.
Yep. We won one match against Illinois in the duel. I don't remember a bunch of other duels, but I know we went one weekend. We drove out to Oklahoma. We wrestled Oklahoma and Oklahoma State on like a Friday and Sunday, or Saturday and Sunday, or something like that. And between the two duels, we won one match.
Oh.
Right? We were 1-19 on the weekend. So that might give you an idea of like how close Mizzou was to being good, right?
Wow.
Not very.
Wow.
And so to answer your other question, it was 100% a gradual thing. And the Ben Askren kind of came and gave it a little, you know, injection of funk, or, you know, slingshotted it a little bit. But that first year we were 4-10. Is that right? I think so. I think we're 4-10. I think the next year we were 11-11. So we brought in a decent recruiting class, had some tough kids come in. And the third year, which was my third year and Brian's, we did like the redshirt year, if you want to call it that, right? You're like, all right, we're going to sit this one out, even though. So I redshirted, Tyron Woodley redshirted, Jeremy Spates redshirted, who was an All-American, Kevin Heron, who's my age, redshirted, who was an NCAA qualifier heavyweight. You know, we had a handful of kids in the lineup who redshirted, and then boom, the next year, which would have been my junior year now, we were making a name for ourselves. You know, I think we were undefeated in duels through the first semester. We won the Reno TOC. We beat Oklahoma State by a half a point, you know? So it's that's how far we came in three or 4 years. Was that the year? Yeah. That year, because we'd always started out dueling Illinois at a high school in the St. Louis area, 1 year on the Missouri side of the river, 1 year on the Illinois side of the river, back and forth. And we wrestled it was in St. Louis, Missouri area, happened to be where I had my springtime club. And we won. We beat them. And they were ranked like ninth, and we were ranked like 20th or something like that, which was, we thought was great. We were at least in the rankings. And we went out, we won every close match, and we won the duel. So it was like, boom, Mizzou has arrived. I think we made it up ranked ninth by the end of the season, dual meet-wise, and then had a little drop-off at the end. And we were still that's where we were still having trouble seeing that postseason success. And you see it still today. A few years ago, I went out to the NCAAs and did like a flow film with NC State and Pat Papalizio. And they had a great season, and there was a similar deal where they just weren't quite ready as a program to be able to step up at NCAAs. So it's like there's different levels of how you grow your program. And of course, Pop, I think a year or two ago was fourth. So they have now arrived. But back to Mizzou side, Mizzou was arriving. And then, you know, we were solid again my senior year. And then my last year was the first year Askren was on the team, but he was redshirting. And then I graduated. And the next year, when Ben's a freshman, they go out and beat Oklahoma State the first dual meet of the year. And that was the first time Mizzou had ever beat Oklahoma State ever in a duel. Wow. So, you know, they had continued to arrive. And by the time Ben was a junior, they were ranked first. Or was that his senior year? Maybe that was his senior year. They were ranked first, and Max was a freshman. And, you know, they underperformed a little bit at NCAAs and came home third. But I guess that's kind of the short story. Maybe it was kind of a longer story, but of where Mizzou came from and to where they are today, and maybe some of the milestones along the way. And, of course, since then, since Ben, they've been, you know, top five, top ten almost every year.
Yeah.
Yeah, they really have.
Come a long way.
Pretty impressive.
Okay, well, let's get right into the next topic. So we're going to talk about what is the best way to introduce kids into wrestling? Sam, what's a short answer? What's the very best way to get them to wrestling?
I would have to say, I mean, take them to practice at the nearby club or whatever club you think is best for them, with the good coaches and partners and stuff. And teach them your favorite parts about the sport. Whether that be, if you really love big throws, then take them to the throwing pad and have them do big throws, whatever, and kind of just bond with them in that way, maybe. And then show them the fun of the sport when you introduce it to them. I mean, obviously, they have to kill themselves sometimes, but, I mean, you don't walk them in right into the room and then put them into a killer practice where it's the whole time, whatever. I think that's kind of obvious, but you got to show them the fun of the sport, whether that be in the fandom of the sport or the technique, whatever that may be, for you or for them.
Yeah,
that would be what I would do.
So I think my answer's a lot of the same, but it's actually a little bit different too. So when I grew up, I know I've talked about this on the show before, but I actually hated wrestling. I hated it. I hated doing it. I hated being out there on the mat. I hated getting beat up. Like, it sucked. And so my dad, like, I would be like, oh, can I please quit? And he'd just be like, nope, can't quit. Just got to keep doing it. And I don't know, for whatever reason, like, I started getting better and better. And even though I didn't really want to, like, I still got better. And then I would, like, the results would come in, and I'd be doing better and better. And I gradually grew to love the sport. But something I notice, like, I mean, I'm on a high school team, and I see kids every single day. And overwhelmingly, what they all have in common is just really low standards for themselves. Kids don't want to try it because they don't believe they can. They just, it's, I don't know. They're not going to commit to anything by themselves. So people will say, like, oh, yeah, I will, and then they never do it. Mm-hmm. It's also like that for, even if, like, you get them in the room during the season, postseason wrestling, where people make the most gains on competition,
right,
is the hardest for kids to get into. So we'll have kids tell us, oh, yeah, I'm going to come to one practice a week. I'm going to come to two practices a week. And State College has open mats all through the summer. M2 is in town.
Right.
Like, there's options. Guys don't show up. And I don't know how to directly remedy that. I know that my parents have instilled, like, these really high standards in me. They have high standards for me. They have high standards for my accomplishments. And they want me to be the best that I can be. And so I've kind of accepted that. And so when kids are like, yeah, I don't have to. I don't want to. I don't care. It's confusing. I don't get it. So,
yeah.
I don't know.
So what would you do to fix that, you think?
I don't know, Sam. I feel like for the most part, standards are just going to keep getting lower and lower and lower. I don't know what to do to change it.
How would you introduce kids to the sport, Mr. Bader?
Well, you know, I was sitting here thinking about this question when you asked it, and I think that there's a bunch of ways you can answer that, right? Like, mm-hmm. I have a daughter who I want to wrestle, right? She's two. She's going to grow up around wrestling, right, because of what I do and where I go. So if we're talking your own kid, which I know you guys probably aren't thinking anywhere that way, but I just want her to be around it, right?
Right.
And I want to go in the living, you know, I roughhouse with her, not only to the degree that, you know, it's acceptable and appropriate to do it with a 2-year-old, but as far as appropriately, you know, acceptable, that's, I kind of take it there. And she pushes me on the couch, I'll push her back, you know, and make her shove me on my back, and we roll around and play and have fun. And we're not trying to teach her moves or skill points. We're trying to get her used to just being a tad more physical, right?
Yeah.
And then her being around wrestling and seeing it, I think, you know, that will take care of itself. And I don't want her to probably know how badly I want her to wrestle, right? Because I don't want her to think she should, because I want her to. I want her to because I want her to want to, if that makes sense.
Right.
Right. And especially, and my parents were awesome. They didn't know anything about wrestling. They were just very supportive. And so, you know, I think being supportive, getting her around the sport, you know, letting her have fun with it. And then eventually, if she wants to start coming to practices and learning stuff, we can take it there. Now, if you're talking like for a teacher's standpoint, getting kids involved, you know, at the middle school or high school level or something like that, or, you know, parent or who, you know, I think one idea is if you're into wrestling and they're your friend, they've at least heard of it, right? Or whatnot. Right. So if I'm trying to get them involved, I might say, hey, why don't you, and maybe this sounds self-serving, right? But hey, try following Flow Wrestling on Instagram, right? Try following these guys, because I think they're going to put out stuff you like, or even some of the meme accounts, which can be funny, right? Like something that could grab fringe fans or potential fringe fans and bring them in, but everybody scrolls through whatever it is, Twitter, Instagram, you name it. Everybody's got, or most people do, right? So if you can plug some kind of wrestling feeds into their feed, now all of a sudden, consciously, subconsciously, whatever you want to call it, they're scrolling through that and they're seeing this. And I follow some Russian wrestling stuff, and I think they have some really cool content. And you guys know there's a million of them across the planet. You know, hey, try following these. And so that's a different angle from like actually getting your feet dirty and your hands dirty and getting on the mat. It's like, let me just put it in front of your face and let you look at it, and then maybe that draws something. So just kind of a different thought of an angle of how to maybe do that. We can sit on this topic for an hour if we want. But
who really knows the best way to get people into wrestling? Because everyone has a different story.
And everyone is different, right? What if I might say, hey, come on, let's get on the mat and let's do it. One guy might say, yeah, because he's fiery and that's the way he grew up, you know? Like, I just liked it. I don't know why, because I was rough and grew up with all these brothers. But Jude, you said you didn't like it at first. So our introductions were different, or what got us hooked anyways were definitely different.
Yeah.
That's for sure. What got you into Flow? This kind of, we switching topics really fast, but.
Yeah, I'm used to it.
What got you into Flow? What made you decide you wanted to be a wrestling journalist? You mentioned earlier that you wanted a job through wrestling after college. Is that you just went straight to Flow? But Flow was pretty.
No, I did not go straight to Flow. It was dumb luck. It was right place, right time. Honestly, I didn't apply to Flow. Flow reached out to me.
Oh, wow.
So Flow started in 2006. I came on in like August of 2008. In July of 2008, and again, you guys know I went to school with Ben and Askren, and he was kind of a big deal in college when Flow Wrestling started, right? He was like, you guys know, personality and hair and style. And so Flow Wrestling comes out. Martin Florian, who started Flow, goes out to Missouri, who's got a really good team and this interesting guy. And he starts interviewing him to do stuff with him. And now Martin and Ben connect and become, you know, they start having a friendly relationship. I'm painting houses one day in between during the summer. I was actually a teacher and coach on painting a house. And I get done. I got like 2 or 3 missed calls from Ben. And I'm like, what the heck does he want? And I finish cleaning and my brushes and stuff. And I get in the car and drive away. And he calls me again. I'm like, what do you want? Why are you continuously calling me? And he's like, hey, do you know Flow Wrestling? I said, yeah. He goes, you know Martin from Flow Wrestling? I said, yeah, I met him with you once or twice. Say, he wants to start an MMA site and he wants you to run it.
Whoa.
What? what are you? And he's like, here's Martin right now. And he hands him the phone. And I'm like, hey, what's up, dude? Paint on my hands and stuff, just driving in my little crappy car. And he's like, yeah, I want you to come down. He's always so fired up. We're gonna do full wrestling. We're going to do for MMA. And I want you to come down and run it and this and that. And I was like, oh, kind of caught off guard. And I'm coaching, right? I've been in St. Louis for 5 years, coaching the same team the whole time. And it's the same school I went to high school with. We didn't have a whole lot of wrestling tradition, but we're starting to build a little bit of a culture, trying to take what I learned at Mizzou and apply it to building a team in St. Louis and getting kids to buy in and kids coming in over the summer and some of them doing individual workouts. And so I'm like, all this is going through my head. I'm like, what kind of timeline are you looking at here? In my head, I'm thinking maybe he'll say like next spring, you know, after this next school year, and I can tell my principal and everything, like, I'm going to do this one more year and then transition out. And Martin's like, I'm thinking maybe next spring. He goes like next week, like we got to do it now. I'm like, Jesus, who is this guy?
Yeah, that's crazy.
I don't know if we're not on video, but I'm in this big building with 300 people right now and employees. And that was his vision from the start. Right. But that was the beginning of this. And I'm like, let me think about this. And, you know, I hung up the phone and gave it a few days and was like, let's do it. Whatever. Let's do it. So just packed
up. Did you
move
straight to Austin from there?
I stuck around through July. I ran like a camp or two at my school, and then I had to tell everybody, which was tough, that I was leaving. And then Martin flew to St. Louis. We got in a car, took a road trip. Actually, the first day we interviewed Matt Hughes, Tyron Woodley, and Robbie Lawler at a gym right over across in Illinois. And then we went up to Iowa, drove down to Texas, flew to California, did like a week or two long road trip. And then, I think I was here. I think I went to the Olympics after that. And then I moved to Austin. I mean, I don't know when you call it moving. I still had a house in Missouri and I was living on Joe Williamson's couch and kind of living in Austin, it was funny. Yeah, it was a good time.
Wow. That's pretty crazy. You just got thrown straight in the fire.
Oh, man. Sink or swim.
So you've been with Flo for over 10 years now?
Yeah, it'll be 11 in just about a month, just over a month.
That's awesome.
That's crazy.
Wow.
Oh, man. So, okay, here's the question. So obviously you've gone to a whole bunch of, like, events and stuff like that. What was the first, like, press pass you got, like, from Flo, the first event that you, like, covered for them?
It definitely would have been some MMA fight. I spent 2 years doing a MMA site. It was called Pure Fight. It's, you know, it's the same setup or model as Flo Wrestling was, at least back in 2008, right? This was pre-live events and pre-Flo Pro. This was just a smaller operation. But the first press pass I ever got, a couple times I just showed up at these small local fights and like have my computer and I found the event promoter and I just showed him my site and I'm like, look, I have this site and the front page was all this California trip. So I'm like, look, there's Uriah Faber, there's Dan Henderson, there's Chuck Liddell. The site's legit. Can I film your show? And they'd be like, this looks legit. Yeah, go ahead. And that's how things were back in the day. So I didn't get press passes at those first ones. We did one in Springfield, Illinois. Maybe we got a press pass. You know what's crazy? Funny, I have the majority of my press passes I still have.
Wow.
Really?
Yeah. So I don't know if you guys follow Frank Chimizo on Instagram, but I just saw the other day he's got this thing on the wall. It's like it's almost like a line. It's made out of metal, though, and you hang all your awards on it, right? It's like, like a clothesline, but it's made out of metal. It's for all your awards that go on your neck. Well, I have the same thing for all of my press passes that are on lanyards. So I'll
that's pretty cool.
And tweet it maybe and tag you guys in it if I remember later.
Okay.
But yeah.
Well, so you've been to a lot of events. You've gotten press passes everywhere. What's one that's super memorable? Maybe the first big one or just an awesome event that you've been to that might stick out over the rest of them.
Well, I guess in that regard, it would be like probably my first world championship, 2011. So I did Pure Fight to part of 2008, 2009, and 2010. We at some point we shut it off, and basically the 2010-2011 season was the first season I did full time flow wrestling, and I went to the world championships in the fall, September. It might have even been September 11th. That's when I flew out, I think. So that was in Istanbul, Turkey. And that was a debut of Jordan Burroughs, and that was pretty awesome. I believe I still have that press pass at home hanging up. So yeah, and all the international events are always really cool, especially, you know, it's like the first time going to an NCAA in Cleveland or an NCAA in Detroit or in one of these different cities is much different than your first time going to the Worlds in Istanbul or Budapest or Tashkent or another city in another country. It's a lot different.
Yeah. I'm excited if I ever get to go to one of those. That's something that would be really, really fun.
Yeah.
I think it's funny how you say, like, oh, I just showed up at this event. I was like, hey, here's my website. And they're like, okay.
Yeah.
Because we're working on getting press passes to Rutgers for Final X.
Okay.
And it is a lengthy process. There's a lot of stuff that goes into it.
Well, like, and go ahead.
Oh, well, we don't have to do background checks because we're minors, but like the safe sport training and all that, it's like 2 hours. Jeez.
Yep. Yeah, it's for real. And I will say this, a Final X event is a lot bigger and a lot more prominent event than these little local fights I was going to. You know, these were like at a hotel ballroom or something.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Well, what do you think about Final X? Let me just ask you this. When was the first time you heard of the idea that is Final X? Because it was kind of Flow Wrestling and USA Wrestling came together to create a new process for making the world team. So when was the first time you heard that name?
Well, I definitely heard the concept before I heard the name Final X. You know, we had talked about for a couple of reasons, right? The World Team Trials, it was good at determining the team, maybe, but that's it, right? It wasn't fan friendly, and you know, we started our relationship with USA Wrestling in 2013, you know, and that's the first time we started streaming the US Open and the World Team Trials, and I think since then, maybe. There's been more emphasis, or at least an equal amount of emphasis placed on the product for the viewer at home and the product for the viewer in venue, right? If it wasn't streamed before, you didn't really care about how it was consumed at home or, you know, it was consumed at all. And now it's like, okay, well, one, and not for consumption, just as far as fairness, we'll just use Kyle Dake as an example, right? He's got to go through this tournament and wrestle David Taylor and a Paulson and, you know, Andrew Howe. And what he's got to wrestle 4 or 5 hammers. And then he's got to go beat Jordan Burroughs twice? Come on. Right? It's like, so now you give Kyle a break or whoever, right? I'm just using Kyle because that's probably the biggest example. And then two, from our point, you know, from Flow Wrestling or who's ever trying to pump this up and get fans to care about it, we got 2 hours. We got 3-4 hours to, you know, after the mini tournament's over, now we know it's Dake versus Burroughs. Or what if Dake gets upset by whoever, you know, along the way, then it's like, so now whoever's going to wrestle in Final X has a break to meet, you know, physical break, a couple weeks at least. And we have a chance, and whoever else, right, wrestling media in general has a chance to make a big deal out of this and make people care. And on top of that, the product itself inside of, you know, Rutgers and Lincoln this year is much more suited to be something cool that fans want to see and attend rather than like, oh my God, I've been in this gym for 9 or 12 hours. And we're just now starting the best of three. Oh,
yeah.
I'm exhausted. Right.
Yeah.
So it's trying to make a big deal. Yeah.
Good. I love how it's going. And I mean, I watched it last year. I was not there, but I watched it on the TV, and it's just a great show. I love the events like that where it's not really a tournament, but it's set matches, kind of like who's number one and Final X, obviously. those are really entertaining because you can look up to it and you can break down the matches, and it's really entertaining to watch those kind of events.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, I was there. I was at State College.
Oh, awesome. It was awesome. Right? It was so really cool. Fun. The pyrotechnics, the fire.
Dude, you could feel it. It's like,
right?
Yeah. It's like that in the BJC, too, for the Michigan match.
Okay.
We sat pretty close, and it was like, it was hot. The fire was hot. it was real cool. What are your favorite matches this year? First of all, here's a question. Lincoln or Rutgers, which, if you could only go to one event, which would you go to?
Oh, guys, you're killing me. I'll just say Rutgers because it's more on my mind because it's first. And I know there are a lot of great matchups, and I think you were just getting ready to ask what I'm the one that maybe intrigues me the most out of any of them is Jaden and Bo, right? Jaden Cox and Bo Nickel, because Bo's so dominant over the last year. And Jaden, right? He's a world champion, he's the best there is at that weight. And is Jaden gonna thump him, or will could Bo sneak one out or two out, you know? I don't know. You know, we haven't seen Bo been dominated maybe ever. Or I can't think of a time Bo got straight up whooped. I've seen him lose.
He got beat pretty bad by Zahid Valencia senior year of high school, I think, in freestyle. Okay. But yeah, that was a while back.
Yeah. That's, I'd say, for those reasons, Lincoln.
Yeah, and if there's anyone who can beat Cox in America, it's definitely going to be Bo. Like, he did it. He went through all the process, and he beat all the other competitors. So he's the one guy who could do it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Wow. So what other favorite matches you got? You like Jaden Bo? I'm excited for Yanni Zane.
I'm excited for Yanni Zane again, for sure. Man, Yanni's just so much fun to watch. Actually, Mike Mal just put up like 20 minutes of Yanni and Bajrang going live from they were at Hoboken at the Edge. And I was up last night doing this Kyle Snyder marathon. I had to stay up and stop the broadcast afterwards. And I stayed up and just watched Yanni and Bajrang wrestle like 20 minutes live. And
nice.
Yanni's so good. I think Yanni got the better of
him.
He's just, when he gets in wrestling positions, you know, like Askren was so unique and creative back in the early, you know, like 2006 or 7 or 8 or whatever. But I feel like what you're seeing with Yanni is something kind of similar in the sense that you're not seeing it a whole lot of other places. Some of the positions he gets in, and it seemed very calculated and chess-like.
Yeah. He's very smart.
Also looking forward to Gable quiz. Oh, yeah.
Got a lot more interesting. I mean, if Gable barely beat Kuhn, or if Kuhn beat Gable, heavyweight would not be a match. But when Gable just totally wrecked Kuhn, that made quiz Gable so much more interesting. Yeah. I don't know who to pick right now.
Tell you on Sunday.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, let's jump into some of our questions.
All right. Yep.
First of all, I have a question.
Yep.
Mr. Bader, who is the most famous person in your cell phone contacts?
The most famous person in my cell phone contacts?
Yeah, most famous person.
Define most famous.
No, I mean, it's up, I know. It's your definition.
God.
I know.
That's a tough one. Like, you have to just pick someone. You put too much thought into it. It might be your well.
Yeah. Maybe Cormier. Maybe
Cormier would be a big one.
There's a lot. You know, I doing this for 10 years. I just met a lot of these people.
How many of them would you call? Like, just give them a phone call.
Right now?
Yeah, sure.
I mean, if I had a reason, any of them.
Yeah, well, duh.
Yeah.
Just to, like, be like, hey, what's up, dude? How you doing?
Yeah.
I don't do that much to my friends, but, I mean, I mean, Ben is the most famous guy that I'm probably closest. He was in my wedding. I was in his wedding. You know, he's a big, he's obviously very popular. So, but yeah, you know, I have, from doing Pure Fight and meeting all these UFC guys a long time ago to, you know, Chael, he's a famous guy that I'm not as close to, but.
Nice.
The list goes on.
I'd love to talk to Astrin sometime, so.
All right, well, we'll see if we can't set it up.
All right.
That'd be awesome.
Let's get into those
questions.
Awesome, Sam. Give it to us. Give us the first.
All right. First one I've got is from Jeremy Williams. And that is, what are your thoughts on NHSCA duels this year, especially elementary and middle school? Will more national level teams like Scorpions and Buxton quit going? I'm just going to talk about this one real quick.
Yeah,
go for it. Because I think it's more towards me, elementary.
Yep.
But I think that Scorpions and Buxton are falling apart just a little bit. I don't think it has anything to do with NHSCA duels. But I think NHSCA duels were run great. I mean, I was out of there at 11:30 in the morning. I could go play on the beach.
Yeah.
So I got, most people got 10 matches. I only got 6, but so you get a lot of matches. Run really well, great competition, and the high school too is, it's like wrestling at the U.S. Open when you're having great competition and you can just go over to the mat next to you and watch Eric Barnett get beat. I mean, it was great. I think it's a great duel and I want to keep going.
Yeah.
So that's just a short answer from me.
NHSCAs have been one of my favorite like events for a couple years now. Like, just the duels are great. The individual tournament's awesome too. Like, for so many mats and so many competitors, it's ran pretty darn well. Really, really love it. It's awesome. But yeah. So I don't know anything about Scorpions or Buxton, but what were you going to say, Mr. Bader?
I've never been to NHSCA Nationals or NHSCA Duels. I've never been to Virginia Beach, at least. We went out there and wrestled at Cox High School. I think it might be in Virginia Beach when I was in college. But I've never been to one of those events. They just always fall on the same day as a different event, or like, you know, now we have Nomad. Wait, no, that's Akron this weekend. Last weekend, Mike Mal and Ollie went. So it's
right. I got to talk to them a little bit.
Yeah, they're great guys.
Well, I actually wrestled at Cox High School. Like, I practiced the day of weigh-ins. Nice. I think Bubba Jenkins went to high school at Cox.
I think you might be right, yeah.
Yeah. So, pretty interesting. But moving on to our next question. It's from Michael Jarman. He says, do you think anyone from other weights would have moved to 86 kilograms if they had known DT would be out? Daring or Zahid, I assume Nickel knew. Would you pick any of those guys to beat PD3 at 86 kilograms? Do you wish they had known and moved to 86 kilograms?
So, here, I got a quick thing here, super quick. I was talking to David the other day. And I would not say it's safe to assume that Nickel knew. Because the truth is, nobody really knew the severity of David's situation. He was, like, the day after Beat the Streets, they flew him out to California to get an MRI. Like, right away, and he stayed in California for a lot of the time over these past couple weeks, or I guess Colorado. So I don't know that Nickel himself actually knew anything. So I guess got to debunk that a little bit.
Debunk
and prepare to be debunked.
86 kg.
Yeah, I think that. Yeah, I probably, Daringer and Zahid both would have beaten PD3, but the truth is, like, they could have gone up. Like, they really could have. And I think PD3 might be, he probably earns it, because he could have gone up to 92, he could have gone down to 79, but no, he decided to stay there with David Taylor. Like,
yeah,
I don't know if he knew he could win or not, but that was his choice. The other guys decided to go down or stay up.
I think the best guy who you know, not saying Derringer's not going to make a team. I'm just going to say it's right. going to be hard to beat a defending world champ. But if anybody in the maybe world can, I think it's Derringer. I think, he, you know, so of the guys who might not qualify, I'd say he might be the best. Again, I'm not saying it's like, well, you guys know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
But I was up late last night watching whatever I said was. I also watched PD3 versus David Taylor from last. No, from 2 years ago, because David sat till Final X last year.
Right.
2 years ago. And David teched him. But it was 2-0 going into the break. And Pat Downey was like training on a farm with Ben Provisor lifting rocks or something crazy.
Yeah. Right?
Like pushing plows and stuff. And what I saw was they got really tired by the end of the first. You know how when somebody's like, their body color almost changes to just a little bit more pink or red, and you can see that they're like overheating and they're getting tired, right? There's no like, oh, yeah. Like you saw that change in skin color with Downey. So like his body is getting worked up and heated up, and it's eating up a lot of energy, and he's taking big breaths. But I mean, he's still like two or three times. Taylor gets to his legs and he just sprawls him right off. He's standing yeah. hand fight with him. I'm not saying he's going to beat David Taylor, right? But
and, hey, and don't get yelled at.
anybody who wants can yell at me. I'm okay with it. This is 2 years ago, right? And Pat's got a home and a consistent routine. And, you know, we all know he's got like a troubled past, and he's not afraid to admit that, and he's not trying to shy away from it. But now I think he's got his stuff better under control now in a place that's going to suit him to be at his best. It is. Will he beat David Taylor if he was at his best? I don't know. But I think he's got a better shot at the world championships than a lot of people are giving him credit for.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree.
Yeah,
I agree.
That's an interesting point. Something that I believe is, I mean, he's not proved that he's on the level of Karugliev or Sharifov.
Sure.
Yazdani, whoever's in that weight, he's not proved he's on that level. I mean, his international competition record is 0-2. Now, I agree that with the NJRTC, he's improving a lot, and he has a lot of room to improve there with Rhys Humphrey, Chris Ayers, and Goodell. And Dubuque too, but I want to see him succeed, and I want to see him go win a world title, but I don't know if I could pick it just because of what he's done.
Yeah, and I don't know if I'd pick him to win a world title, but I would also say Zahid Valencia is unproven at the senior level internationally, right?
Right,
right.
So, and as is Bo, right? So we're talking about, and the one guy who is somewhat proven is Derringer at 79, right? He's beat a good guys at 79, but really nobody's proven internationally at 86, except
that's
for Derringer.
And I believe I truly believe that he's our best guy at 86, and he's our guy at 86, and USA for him. And he's going to Kazakhstan, and I'm cheering for him to win a world title.
Same.
So
I'm gonna twist up some cornrows maybe.
You can do that. I couldn't. I've got very short hair.
Oh, you know, wait, it's not until September. Grow it out there, my friend.
That's true. Hair out for
PD3.
Yes. What if we got everybody to do that?
That'd be crazy.
Yeah.
That'd be insane.
All right.
I want to see Christian Piles do that. That'd be fun.
No, I want to see Willie do it. Yeah.
Yeah, good luck
with that, guys.
He has to get a wig. I bet Nomad could.
Oh, Nomad would. That's his shot.
He would do it with even if PD3 wasn't wrestling.
Yes, yes.
All right. Next, last, final question.
All right.
From Bobby Brookenshire. He says, I would like to get your perspectives on the possibility of reducing the weights down from 14, as it would immediately affect the two of you. So I don't know about Tennessee's high school. I don't know if they're going to consider weight changing, but I do know that the PIAA is already moving towards that. Some quick thoughts. I think that it's not necessarily a bad thing, but I think that there should be less upper weights, and I don't know. Like, it's like what they were saying on FRL on Tuesdays. Like, the lightweights is where guys really, really care about wrestling. That's when the competition's all incredibly deep. So I don't want to repeat them and what they said, but I agree a lot with what Willie said. And I think another thing is that already, like, I don't know, I wrestled 115 for states this year, and already the brackets are, like, incredibly deep. Like, everyone there is super duper good. You know, if when you're combining weight classes or pushing kids around, what's going to happen is that, like, that it's just going to get even more deep, and it's hard to fathom, but that's what's going to happen. What about you, Sam? What do you think about this?
Yeah, so I'd probably have to discuss this with more people before I form a solid opinion. But just right off the bat, I would think just an idea would be 14 for duels, 14 weights, or maybe, man, yeah, maybe 13, so that if you're tied, you could just go to most wins.
Okay.
Most individual wins. So maybe 13 for duels, but then switch it to postseason tournaments goes to 12 weights, and so you can enter two wrestlers.
Okay, would that include states?
Cool. Yes, postseason tournaments would include states, regionals, districts, maybe NHSCA individuals, I don't know, blow nationals, whatever.
So you I think changing the weights for states is actually not the best idea, because you see it all the time when the postseason, like, weight shuffling goes on. Mm-hmm. So, like, I don't know, the guys drop weights in preparation for states. It bumps, like, really good competitors out of lineups. Just, it depends on how deep your team is.
Right.
So, and...
But it would do that if you dropped it for both. So, it's basically either...
Right, but it's not...
...forfeits in some schools or kick some kids out of the lineup
The more we can keep high school wrestling consistent, and the more we can keep everything the same across the board, the easier it's going to be for us. Like, if we're all switching weights and the weight classes themselves are changing... like, that's really tough. Mm-hmm. So, I think that, I like the idea. I think I'm going to disagree with it in theory.
Okay. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. I think I'm fine with that, but, I just need some discussion, some thought for that.
Right.
I don't really know. I like the change to 12, though. I do like that, just in general. I think that's a great idea. I think we have way too many weights up high in high school.
Yeah. Another thing, so you had said, like, oh, let two wrestlers from each school.
Yeah.
I think that'd be good. I think it would be the only one of them should be able to score points for your team, though. So it shouldn't be, like, I think it should be, like, the higher-ranked ones should score points. So,
why is that?
So then you don't have teams with two wrestlers and then teams with one wrestler. So it's not like trying to fill up a, I don't know. Think of it like...
Oh, that makes sense.
So, like, you've got teams that can only have one guy who wrestles 106 because they just don't have that many wrestlers. Yeah, but other guys have two 106 pounders. I don't know.
Yeah.
That's just a thought.
What do you think, Mr. Bader?
You know, I think... So I don't pay as much attention to high school wrestling, especially at the local level, right? Mm-hmm. I don't really pay attention to St. Louis wrestling very much. You know, I used to know the landscape there, but I do have a brother that coaches, so I'm a little plugged in. And it sounds like there are just, I don't know if it's just the St. Louis area or if it's a greater, wider problem, but they're having trouble filling teams. Getting the number of kids to wrestle. So there's just so many forfeits all the time. And this is what I'm gathering. So if when I heard that Pennsylvania, which obviously is a very wrestling rich state, I heard about them, you know, considering the move to 12. And then my thought was, I wonder if they're having similar problems. I wonder if you're just not having the number of kids come out. Therefore you're having all these forfeits. And that's why they want to consolidate and make go from, you know, 14 to 12. And if that's the case, maybe that's a whole different conversation than kind of what's going on here. But if that's the case, I would hope that they'd find a way to remedy it by getting more kids to come out for wrestling. That's not the state's job. The state's job is to make rules for once everybody is there. So I could see, you know, if that becomes a big problem and just like half the time nobody's getting wrestled because they've gotten these forfeits, then I get, you know, that could make sense.
Right. So I can speak a lot for Pennsylvania High School. So I'm in a AAA school. State College has 2,500 students. Like, just, it's massive. And so we had no problem filling our team this year. I think we only had one forfeit. I don't know. But I know a lot of AA schools really do have trouble, like five kids.
Right.
Like, not able to fill it at all. And basically all they can do is just go to tournaments just to get matches. Like, they can't even have dual meets.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I don't think that they should switch it, like, at least AA. I think that they should, if they're going to make it a weight change, that it should all, like, all the weight should change for AA.
Yeah, no, I don't think it should be by class. I think it should be by state.
But it does, there's a big difference from AA to AAA.
Sure.
It's just big schools.
Yeah.
Right. Well, I think that about does it for this episode. It was great to talk to you, Mr. Bader.
Yeah, thank you so much for coming out.
Man, it was great to talk with you guys. Time,
but that's all right. I enjoyed every minute of it.
It was great.
We'll have to do this again sometime. Awesome.
Hey, I'm all for it. This is what I do for a living, so.
It was fun. I'd love to get anyone who wants to be on the show, we'll let you on. Basically.
You bet. You bet. I'll spread the word. These guys are going to be jealous when they see me on here.
Oh, yeah. So, guys, that's a wrap for episode 10. We got some Final X previews coming up next week and the week after. Please share the podcast. Tell your friends, because we just want to keep growing. You can send us questions. send us some questions. Our Twitter is HMA_pod, or email is hmat@advantage@gmail.com. You can follow us at samwise_2006 and at @FRL_questioner. And then Bader's Twitter, which I already forgot again.
Mark S. Bader.
Go follow him there. Mark S. Thanks Bader, so you go follow him there too. Mr. Awesome. Bader, thank you so much. Thank you, Sam, and thank you to our listeners.
Awesome, guys. Thanks so much. Thanks for having me on. It was a great chat with y'all.
No problem.
No problem.
All right. Have a great day, fellas.